Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Reassurance is knowing our pensions will be supporting you in the years ahead. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Now, while the flow of information from Iran has been seriously hampered by the internet blackout, stories of a violent clampdown on protests are filtering out. One eyewitness said they are charging at crowds in vans and bikes. I've seen them slowing down and deliberately shooting at people's faces. Many have been injured. The streets are full of blood. I fear I'm about to witness a sea of dead people. Roland Oliphant, chief foreign analyst with The Telegraph, joins me now. Roland, as I say, some people are managing to get access to the Starlink internet system, and we're seeing some videos and accounts coming out of Iran, and I think it's fair to say most of them very, very grim indeed. Human rights organisations are putting the number of protesters killed in this crackdown at over 500, but many believe that might be a conservative estimate.
I think it probably is conservative. We've got a figure of at least 503 from a US-based human rights activist agency, but they have as much difficulty working out what's going on the ground as we do. This communications shutdown, it's not just the internet. Like, good old-fashioned telephone calls are not getting through to Tehran. There are some Starlink terminals, but you know, even those are now being confiscated by the regime. Some people have gone to the length of, you know, driving all the way from Tehran to the border with, you know, Azerbaijan or another country to just pick up a little bit of signal on a foreign SIM card from the neighboring country's networks just to be able to speak to their family. So the truth is, those estimates probably very, very conservative. Very likely higher numbers of casualties, but a real kind of murky blackout at the moment that makes it very difficult for us to say with certainty what's going on in the country.
The government, the regime there, are characterising this as an attempt by the US and Israel to effect regime change, whereas obviously activists and others on the ground there are saying this is a real revolution. It is, as one activist described it, Iran's Berlin Wall movement or moment. What can we say with any certainty is happening, Roland?
Well, look, there's a popular uprising against the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's just true. And that's because it's the latest in, I think it's the fifth or sixth such uprising in the past 8 years or so. They've been happening with increasing regularity. And what's driving it is there is genuine frustration with restrictions on freedoms, with corruption, and also on a just a dire economic situation, also environmental crisis, a huge number of crises facing ordinary Iranians, and they're fed up. So it's quite clear that this is a grassroots movement that people are taking to the streets because they want to see Ayatollah Ali Khamenei go. They would like to see free elections. They would like to see just an end to this system, which they associate with things being just moribund and dreadful. But at the same time, you know, would the Israelis and the United States like to see regime change in Iran? Yes, I'm sure they would. And a lot of those on the streets are openly calling for a change of government, at least.
If the government does fall, if there is a regime change, what then? What fills that vacuum? I mean, in terms of what is there in the opposition now, is there what's likely to emerge in its place?
So this is the big question, and I know you've called me for my expertise, but the answer is nobody really knows. There is no obvious alternative or alternative leader or government in waiting, and that's partly because the Islamic Republic has gone out of its way to eliminate any possible alternative. You know, any leader who seems to be emerging has been arrested or exiled or shot. So you've got a number of people who are putting themselves forward as potential leaders. There's the most prominent at the moment is Reza Pahlavi, the exiled crown prince of Iran, and he's been appealing to Iranians from abroad on social media. He's certainly got some following there. He's certainly built a quite tightly organized political machine. And I've certainly spoken to some Iranians who say, you know, we're not keen on the crown prince, we don't want the monarchy back, but, you know, he's all we've got, and at least he's not the Ayatollah. That said, look, the people who really run Iran are the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. And I say that not just because they've got the guns, which they do have, they also run the economy. They own pretty much any major business or sector of industry and infrastructure. Until they decide, you know, that they're giving up on this regime, it's difficult to see anything changing, and they are the people best placed to take over in another form if and when it collapses.
Pahlavi is claiming that the Islamic Republic is facing a severe shortage of mercenaries, that many armed and security forces have left their workplaces or are ignoring orders to suppress the people. Is there any indication that there's any truth in that?
Again, I mean, this is another one of those things that's just impossible for us to confirm. So Pahlavi's team have set up a kind of a defection service where if you're a rank and file member of the IRGC or the army or the police, you could scan a QR code and get instructions from him on how to disobey orders, how to not take part in suppressing the opposition. Look, it wouldn't surprise me that a lot of ordinary soldiers from the regular military, ordinary policemen, maybe even rank and file members of the IRGC, you know, are reluctant to fire on their compatriots. You know, that they're as disillusioned as many other people. That said, over the weekend we saw a major crackdown, and that indicates there are still plenty of people who are willing to go out and kill on behalf of the regime. That's why you're seeing all of those horrific videos that you referenced at the beginning of our conversation.
Yeah, and well, of course, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei saying this weekend that the government wouldn't back down. Are people still braving those protests? Or is there a sense that they are maybe fading a little because of just the sheer brutality of the crackdown?
I'm asking impossible questions, Roland. I know. But like, I mean, I think that is the sense today, to be honest. I mean, We've been watching it from the Telegraph newsroom, and you know, we've got the impression, getting through to whatever context we can around, that okay, it's fairly quiet today. The government has organised massive pro-regime counter-protests in the centre of town, and state TV is kind of broadcasting reports about the number of people who've been killed, in a way of saying, you know, this could happen to you if you go out on the streets. I mean, I think people feel like, you know, every night is a test, right? Every night is a test of resolve. Every night is a test of whether the crackdown has worked. So what's the time now? So it's, you know, probably around 8 or 9 o'clock in Tehran right now. We'll see tonight if more people come out. I mean, what I would say is that, look, Iran's been seeing these waves of protest kind of every 2 years for the past 8 or 9 or 10 years now. Each time they seem to last longer, they seem to be more widespread and more intense, and they also get more violent and more radical. So even if the regime rides out this wave, there's probably going to be another one in the near future, because they're struggling to address the driving grievances that are causing.
And then, of course, we have the outside situation for this one of US President Donald Trump saying that he would use force and he would retaliate. Do you think that is a realistic possibility over the next number of days?
I mean, my editor asked me the same question today, and I've literally just fired a piece on this, kind of struggling with this. Will he or won't he? You're right. He's made a very clear promise. He said, I will intervene if they start killing people. They've started killing people. So what is he going to do? We understand he's going to be reviewing the options put in front of him by his military chiefs tomorrow. But it's a tricky one for a number of reasons. One reason is that, you know, Iran and Iranians have a long and proud history of rallying around the flag. You know, they will come together to defend their country from outside attack, and the regime is very practiced in turning that to its own advantage, to use it as a way of saying, look, you might have a problem with us, but now foreigners are attacking us. So, you know, the Americans won't want to do the regime a favor in that sense. Then there's the risk of Iranian retaliation. What will they hit? Will they send a huge number of missiles at Israel again, or they hit American forces in the region.
Do they have the capacity to do that? Do we know?
Well, so the Iranian military took a massive battering in June when the Israelis launched this 12-day air campaign against them. And we know that dealt a huge amount of damage to the Iranian military. That said, they are said to have these kind of underground missile cities, for want of another word, kind of buried in the mountains. Not all of those were hit. It's not clear to me how many ballistic missiles they have left. But it is possible they still retain the capacity to cause an awful lot of damage around the region should they decide that they want to go down fighting.
Okay, we leave it there for now. But many thanks, Roland Oliphant, Chief Foreign Analyst with The Telegraph there.
Now we're going to go back to the story on Iran, where widespread domestic protests against the ruling Islamic regime continue and have prompted US President Donald Trump to threaten action should the violent clampdown continue. Now, there have been reports that the US ambassador to Israel has said that no action will be taken. But let's hear now from America and Simon Marks, Chief Correspondent for Feature News Story in Washington. Simon, good evening to you.
Good evening to you, Colm.
So we're hearing varying reports. President Trump has said he will intervene. We heard of that briefing of the US ambassador to Israel saying possibly no intervention. What's the latest?
Well, I think it's important to underscore that the only person that's going to be making this decision is Donald Trump himself. We know that he has been presented with a range of options, some of them military in nature, some of them non-military in nature, and they have included the idea of launching pinprick airstrikes on some of the security forces that are deemed by the United States to have been responsible for trying to suppress demonstrations with violence. And we've obviously seen the reported but not independently confirmed death toll from Iran rising now north of 500. But equally, there have been indications, I think, in the last few hours that while the president earlier in the month was saying American forces are locked and loaded and that he wouldn't hesitate to launch strikes in the event that peaceful protesters were killed by the regime, there is some evidence to suggest that cooler heads are prevailing within the White House, as they have come to understand that there is a real risk of actually inflaming the standoff, because the regime would then have the ability to say, as they are already indicating, that the protesters are agents of a foreign government, of an American government, planning to try and intervene to overthrow Iran's ruling clerical regime. So it looks as though he's now even talking about the possibility of holding talks with the Iranians. He said on Air Force One last night that the Iranians want to talk, and he's thinking about whether he wants to go ahead with that. So at the moment, I would say it doesn't look like there's an imminence to military strikes, but you never know what he's going to do until he does it.
And for its part, Iran has said it's ready for war and it's ready for dialogue.
Yes, well, Iran has said that in the event of US military strikes, Iran will hit back and target US Air Force and naval bases in the region. And remember that in the aftermath of America's bunker-busting bomb attacks on Iran's nuclear facilities last summer, the Iranians did prove able to strike at the Al Udeid Air Base in Qatar, which is home to 10,000 American servicemen. There are other options that are on America's table, including trying to win the information war underway between the West and Iran.
Yeah, talk to us about that, the role of Elon Musk and President Trump saying he would talk to him about trying to supply more Starlink terminals there in order to circumvent this internet blackout that's in place.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that internet blackout, we know, has certainly disrupted the ability of many protesters to communicate, which is why Elon Musk is indicating he wants to get Starlink in there, and it is presumed that there are some underground Starlink terminals possibly already operating within Iran. But there's another thing that the United States can do as well, and that is continue trying to blanket Iran with information. And it is notable that the only bit of the Voice of America that is still operating, because Donald Trump, you know, basically incinerated Voice of America when he arrived in office, The only bit that is still functioning is VOA Farsi, which is the Farsi language service aimed at Iran. And there are certainly reports that some of those satellite broadcasts are still getting through and can make a difference.
Iran's deterrent before this was militias in Iraq, the Assad regime in Syria, the Hezbollah in South Lebanon, and indeed Hamas in Gaza. But they're much diminished. We've also seen the leader of Venezuela taken, effectively abducted and brought to America. So, I mean, has this changed the thinking in America of what the possibilities are, or is this informing the debate of what the approach should be with regard to Iran?
Well, I think the answer to that is yes in both regards, Colin, because certainly it's changed the calculus of possible options. You know, the military option becomes a stronger option with the absence of Hezbollah sort of forcefully supporting Iran. But equally, the Venezuela experience, the ousting of President Nicolas Maduro, and who's now, you know, residing in the Metropolitan Detention Center up in Brooklyn, New York, also posed a bit of an issue for the Trump administration, because it's already trying to explain to the president's core America First, Make America Great Again supporters why running Venezuela, as President Trump claims that he's doing, is in the American national interest. And Venezuela is in America's own backyard. Iran is obviously much further away, and precisely the kind of military adventurism that Donald Trump on the campaign trail told his supporters that he wasn't going to engage in as president. So that may be constraining him slightly.
Okay, clock's against us. Thanks very much, Simon Marks, chief correspondent for Feature News in Washington. Coming up, we'll be back with the weather.